prosecutors, Department of Homeland Security agents, and curious passersby often ask me, just what is this truth jihad thing anyway? Well, everybody knows what truth is, but jihad is a misunderstood term. Jihad means effort or struggle. The greater jihad is the struggle to be a better person, while the lesser jihad is the struggle to defend the community. Prophet Muhammad, peace upon him, did say that the best jihad is a word of truth flung in the face of a tyrant. And that's what we do here at Truth Jihad Radio! Every Friday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, 5 to 7 Pacific, right here on Revolution Radio!
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of this program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps. The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Rock band the Foo Fighters, Taylor Hawkins, has died at the age of 50. Announcing his death, the band said they were devastated and spirits infectious will live on with. The band is currently set to do the UK this summer.
music. Okay, folks, I'm not really sure if I'm coming through or not. Maestro in the chat says that I was a little bit breaking up here. There's some issues going on here technically. I'm not really sure. It seemed like there was someone sharing this Skype with me. I'm not really sure if there's anybody logged on into the studio with me. I'm not even sure if that's even possible. Well, going. Let's just see what happens right here. This is a show dedicated to Taylor Hawkins, the drummer for the Foo Fighters, who unexpectedly a few days ago. Any time we lose somebody, that has touched our lives, we all are lost in a way by it. This is an interview that just features this wonderful person, and I'm going to start it right now. Let's see if I can get this going.
The man, the legend, the punk rock cozy pal for our times, this generation's dashing version of Stuart Copeland, the one and only Taylor Hawkins.
Hi, man.
How are you? Thank you for agreeing to do this. Oh, well, let's see over the course of this. Because coming up, some drumming tips, some insights into what makes for a great drummer. But first, we should do some context first. Background. Where fucking music? How old were
you? Each cuff. Since when I was five. Right. And I had a neighbor named Kent Clitter who had a rickety rackety drum set and a couple of beat up acoustic guitars.
Right.
And I just wasn't really good at anything when I was 10.
Yeah.
I wasn't particularly good in school. I wasn't good at sport, as you would say. I was okay at baseball, but yeah. I hadn't found something yet. I remember I was 10 years old. It was the summer of 1982. He was a couple years older than me, but he had this drum set, and I was trying to learn how to play guitar, and it seemed too much like work, like homework. All right, you know? And he said, just sit on the drums. Just try it. I want to show you a beat. You go like, one, two, three, four on the hi-hat. And then you cross your hand over here. And then on the third beat, I want you to hit this thing called a snare drum. One, two, three, four, one, two, three. And a one, first beat, I want you to put the kick drum on there. So he goes, so basically I want you to go one, two, three, four, one, two, three, four. And I went, okay. One, two, three, two, three, three. Probably wasn't, probably a little more like one, two, three. I don't know. Not quite there yet, but he really literally said, you know, you're a drummer.
Really?
Yeah. And he was actually a pretty decent drummer, and he had this, he had a 2x4 holding up his tom-tom. I remember that. Is said you're a drummer that like you can tell really quick if someone's a drummer. There's something that just I took to it immediately, and so I mean that day was a lightning bolt shot into me, and I'm like, I'm a drummer. That's what I do, and that sort of became my armor, and then I just fell in love with it, and then. At the same time, around that time, my friend down the street, Lee Burton, her brother, Army, so that was back in the 80s, to 6 months, or you go to the Army. And that was, and so he went in the Army, he left all his records.
Right.
And there was this record with this monster holding these guys in his hand, this cartoon monster, and it was Queen, News of the World. I just don't love that record.
What do you think else about that? Is
because there's music I really is like Star Wars, you know, and all it was really there was something in between that had that cinematic, which at least still does. I mean, they have the biggest movie here. But there was really so at a hard rock, you had, you know, a ballad, and you had a hard rock song, and then you had a bluesy, shuffly song. And really, I mean, they, and then I to love the Beatles as well, and I see the cross between them and the Beatles. And, you know, you got a Queen record and you got everything. You know, you got a lot of all these styles. And there's just a all these styles on there. And so Woodham's the drummer, the guy with the blonde hair. And I was like, oh my God. And, well, then I find out he's the guy doing all the. Pretty high notes on that. And, you know, the draw rock. And do it wrong. The other record. And I have Queen Jazz and all the drums, everywhere.
Studio. Massive studio space.
That sounds horrible. It was. I mean, I would sit there and look at every single drum. And, you know, I felt in my of police. That's
how many books. If you want to be good,
and all of a sudden. Stuart Copeland.
Yeah.
My two first major inspirations, and I would say probably the two guys that shaped a lot of what I do when I play drums in a rock band is Roger Taylor and Stuart Copeland. The funny thing is they're so far away from me. In the spectrum of drummers, Roger's got this great, big, fat, you know,
welcome back. Anybody hear me on chat? Murr, I see you didn't. Do you hear me now? If you're listening for me, you have, okay. What about a starts from I'm going streams and come back. Hang on, I'm gonna try. Maybe this one shot. Let's get some going on this QB today. I'm gonna check with the chat room. Let's see, I don't know. May just have a dragging internet over here. Interesting. It's interesting how sometimes it seems as if there's actually some love not with us here at the studio. The problem more than likely is my internet service. I'm going to give it a couple more shots here. Okay, we're going to test this right now. I'm going to continue playing
the man, the legend, the punk rock cozy pal for our
band is Roger Taylor and Stuart Copeland. And the funny thing is they're so far away from each other on the spectrum of drummers. Roger's got this great, big, fat, you know.
This is an interview.
That's a little bit of somebody to love.
Hawkins about 3 years ago, so it's really pretty good. Can't barely stand on my feet. Take a look at yourself. Get in the mirror. Cry. But you can't yell. And then
Sarah covering you. But they were so different from each other. I felt like it was. Looking back on it, it gave me a pretty wide berth as far as styles.
So did you get your own drum kit then? When was the point where you got your first kit?
So the first kit I got was it was the ragtag deal. You know, nowadays, a lot of, if a kid shows any interest in music, it's like, oh, we're buying you a $4,000 drum set. It wasn't like that when we were kids, you know? It was like, your dad was like, you want to play what? Music? Why? No, drums? Loud, no. So I, like, it was that thing, you know, you go down the street, you heard that some guy down the street selling a bass drum, you know, and then another guy, you know, has a Japanese copy snare drum of Ludwig and you know, your snare. And then I really literally bought cymbals out of Sears, a magazine, like, you know, you'd buy... You know, you buy like your laundry machines and stuff, and they were like, because cymbals and drums are really expensive.
Yeah.
And when you're 10 years old, if a pair of hi-hat cymbals is
that's about a year's worth of pocket money. By
I mean, point. Yeah, I mean it was just on. I didn't even know. So I put a ragtag drum set together.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was my first drum set, and my dad was nonplussed, to say the least, about any of it.
If you were, so going back, putting yourself back there now, so after the first beat that you were taught, if we were trying to help some of our listeners, so you've got their own first kit together, where would you go next then? What was your next progression? What were the first beats that you sort of learned on the first?
Well, it's funny. It was that beat and then fills, drum fills connecting you to things. And it's learning how to play a song.
I was going to say, did you play along to a lot of songs?
Yeah, it's the first thing I did. And, I mean, right away I was playing along to Night at the Opera and Queen the Game and trying to play to Zenyatta Mandata and trying to play to The Romantics, What I Like About You, and Haircut 100. And I literally would just turn on the pop radio back then, like literally like, you know, a dial radio, and would just play everything. And it didn't matter what it was. And... you know, I didn't know half of it was drum machines back in the 80s, so I was trying to figure out a shout.
You. If you're not in control, then someone else is. Join me, Ivy West, for Voices on the Wind, Saturday. I discuss government, health, metaphysics, suppressed science, universal mysteries, little-known incredible facts, alternative energies, and even more than you can imagine. Won't you join us on Revolution Radio Saturdays? For Voices on the Wind, with me, Ivy West.
There are lives in the balance, people under fire, children at the cannons. There are...
because if your head's in the sand, your tail is a target.
The pill has been taken. Blinders are off. Are we in the end game, or are we simply living a replay of a time that's already happened, with no choices? Different people have different points of view. When it comes to creation versus evolution, my point of view, we were created to evolve. The Red Pill, every Sunday night at 8 p.m. Eastern in Studio B. www.freedomslips.com and revolution.radio. Check it out.
Hey guys, Scorpio here. Join me every Saturday at 2 p.m. here on Studio A for the Scorpio Conspiracy Show, where we discuss the hidden agendas that impact our lives and uncover the secret societies and the shadowy elite who construct the reality that we are supposed to believe. So be there Saturdays, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, here on Studio A on Revolution Radio, and learn what's really going down.
Lost a little honey on the lone highway. Left me for another on the lone highway. They killed Dirty Don McGee on the lone highway.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the Internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution. Radio! The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
What's up, Lester?
What's up, Cole? You ready to do this?
You know I am.
Let's get it on!
Put the hammer down.
Let's do this. Hey, them beers cold? That's cold beers.
Get it on!
All right, you ready? Let's do this. Come on! Come on!
Bang, bust it up. Back is that one right there. I'm stuck outside you, but look, we can use one another, another night here, but look,
welcome back, folks. This is Captain Fred, and today we're celebrating the life of Taylor Hawkins, drummer for the Foo Fighters, the instrumental person in the Coattail Riders. Might want to look them up. They have some really good tunes, and there's not going to be any new ones either. So today, we're honoring and celebrating Taylor Hawkins. Such a wonderful guy.
I'm not gonna die.
Tears for Fears is. Drum machine go do go kaka do do cha cha cha, but I would just play along, and it's funny because my son, he's 12 and he's good at drums, but he doesn't really care that much about it. And it's just fun. He can play, you know, he can play all this these drum fills, and he can play beats and stuff. But I'm like, if you want to learn how to play, you have to play a song.
Is that learning the discipline of being a drummer then early, do you think?
Well,
just understanding what the job of a drummer is.
Well, the first thing I wanted to do the second I got that crappy kick and Saren hat and Sears cymbal was start a band. Right away. Like, there was no question. So you were recruiting your fellow neighborhood friends and stuff and literally just put, you know, try to get that dude's mom to buy him a guitar amp, and then you put the vocals in the guitar amp and the guitar, and then a bass amp. What's a bass amp? I don't know. Well, they're like $500. And you're like, I'm never going to have that, ever. There's never, but you'd put it together, and eventually, through just, you know, Christmas and small amount of thievery and however you had to get it, you got the gear you needed to try and start your first really horrible band.
I'm going to talk about your first band, horrible or not, in a second. This is a terrific excuse, though, to play Queen on Six Music. Queen on Six Music is the choice of our guest, Taylor. Why that particular Queen song? What was it and why?
Well, it was their first single, wasn't it? Keep Yourself Alive.
Yep.
I think they may have done a BBC session in this very room for it, or somewhere right down the hall, which is amazing. Just to be here in these amazing places. Anyways, and that was the first time the public heard Queen. And it was all there. I mean, it was still that, but I love the sound of that first Queen record because they were still sort of students, still sort of kids. They were still figuring it out. They hadn't totally learned how to layer their vocals perfectly yet. Yeah. It was a little ragtaggy still. Like, they, you know, they got better. Like, and they kind of grew in the public eye, which is awesome. But there's something about that first record that is just, you can hear them trying to, like, figuring it out on tape, which is a beautiful thing. That's art, you know. And there's a drum solo in the middle of their first song. I mean, only Roger Taylor would get that done.
I mean, we mentioned.
Right, I'm going to put a drum solo here. It's staying. I learned that drum solo. I tried. You know, funny enough, when kids ask me today, hey, I'm in a band, and, you know, what should I do? How do I do it? What's the deal? You know, I said, well, you got to play as much as you can in front of people. Get the stage time.
Yeah.
And, you know, write songs. That's good. Be creative. But learn a bunch of other people's songs, too. Because for the most part, no one's going to want to hear the first group of songs that you start writing when you're 12 or 13 years old. Yeah. It's fine.
Yeah.
Write them. That's cool. Do that. But also learn a bunch of covers because, I mean, the Beatles were a cover band before they really – I mean, the Stones were just a cover band. Yeah. And that's where you learn the craft of what a song is and how you get inside a song. So, A, you're getting stage time in front of people because you're actually playing songs that they might want to hear. No matter how badly you're playing them, at least they pretty sure that's a Clash song, or they're pretty sure that's
it's
a Nirvana song, or they're pretty sure that's that, you know, whatever. And Van Halen was a cover band.
Jumping forward, something eventually, I suppose your first brush with proper fame almost is touring with Alanis Morissette, which you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
How did that end up happening?
Well, I actually, the first proper pro gig, if you will, like actually someone handed me a paycheck besides a few weddings and a few beer parties and stuff in Laguna Beach, was a lady named Sass Jordan. And she was from Canada. And this manager was like, you know, I have this girl I just signed a management deal with, and she just finished a record. And most of it's kind of loops and stuff like that. It was mid-90s, and since her name is Alanis Morissette, I'll introduce you to her. So I met her, and she was quiet and sweet and stuff. And then next thing, a couple months later, he's like, hey, we're auditioning drummers. So I auditioned. I got the tape, and the first song that was on the tape was You Oughta Know. We did, you ought to know. I want you to know. You know, and thankfully, thank you, Alanis. I love you so much. She gave me the gig.
Yeah. She wasn't scared about how loud you were then.
No, I think it was cool. Her and her manager were like, it should be more of a rock band. And I don't think the producer was too stoked, actually, on me, because I think he was hoping it was going to be some guy playing along the computers and being very pure to the record. We just threw the record out the window with Alanis and turned it into a live rock band.
Yeah.
And that's what the manager had in mind, and that's what Alanis was down for. She's like, that was the record. She kind of gave us free rein, really, actually.
Yeah.
Bless her heart. And we really did completely destroy those songs. But we were a good band. And
so,
that's where I met Dave.
I was just about to say, enter Dave Grohl. Well, around that time, on tour?
Yeah, so basically we were over here doing... Actually, I'd met Dave once in L.A. And the Foo Fighters album had just come out. And I was so blown away with it. And I was just the energy, and I loved his vocals. I loved it. It was like Steve Miller on steroids, or like, you know, at a punk rock club, you know. There was this breeziness about him, and the easiness about the way he was. And then he would scream really good, you know. He had a good scream as well. But his verses were pretty, and like, I don't know, there was almost a Beach Boys-y thing or something. I couldn't put my finger on why I loved it, but I just fell in love with that record. And then I met Dave at some radio show somewhere, like in LA, for the first time. And he was really nice to me. And I was like, wow, he was nice to me. I'm not cool. He was nice to me. And then we started doing the same festivals over here and a lot in the UK. And we just... And just fell in love. We just fell in love. But I didn't think anything of it because they had a drummer. And I got on a plane with Alanis after doing a couple shows with the Foo Fighters. And she said, what are you going to do when Dave Grohl asks you to join the Foo Fighters? She literally said that. And I went, well, that's never going to happen. And I would never leave you, darling. The drummer quit, or he couldn't handle the job, and it's a tough job, but, you know, it ain't easy, you know, living in those shoes.
Was the Color and the Shape done?
What had happened was, so he had made the first record all by himself.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. He did it, like, in 5 days, of course. And
being Dave Grohl.
Being Dave Grohl, 5 days.
Yeah.
The master of who gives a crap, but, oh, look at what I did. He's brilliant. And then the second record, they really wanted to get it really... He knew it was a make-or-break record. And the drummer just couldn't handle it. Couldn't handle the pressure. Wasn't used to the studio. You know, studio's a whole different trip. It's not... There's one thing to play Bash It Out live. No one's sitting there scrutinizing each... I mean, the snare's got to land in the same spot every time so that it's called a groove. You know, the time has to be good, or you play with click tracks, or, you know, we do sometimes in the studio, sometimes we don't. But the drummer just, he just chunked it. And then Dave, you know, famously went back and re-recorded his drum tracks, and he didn't fire him. Everyone thinks, oh, he fired him. He didn't fire him. He said, dude, you're just not ready to make a record yet, and this record's make or break. And I've made records, and I know what I'm doing, and, you know, learn how to record. And he couldn't handle it, so that's, I stepped in, and I called Dave myself, and I said, I'm your drummer. Sorry. And he's like, but you're an Alanis. She's the biggest thing in the world. And I'm like, well, you know, Alanis is a solo act, and you're this is a band, and I love your band, and I want to play hard rock. And I think Alanis was going, you know, in a different direction, I'd heard.
Yeah.
You know, and which was great. And, you know, me and Alanis are fine. We're friends now, and which is great. And we just, you know, look at the past and enjoy it. Literally 18 straight months with Alanis, and just discovering the world with her, and it was beautiful, and she gave me a lot of leeway, and I thank her forever for it. And she was a great leader and a great boss, and now I have a great leader and a great boss again.
So you join the Foo Fighters.
And the first time I ever recorded with the Foo Fighters was, it wasn't in this exact room, it was in Studio 4, I believe.
Well, Maida Vale 4, just around the corner. Wow, really? It was the first time?
Yeah.
Doing what set of songs, can you remember?
Yeah, it's funny. It's a funny story, actually. So I joined the band, and one of our first trips was coming to England, the UK, to do a tour. And one of the first things we did was come to Maida Vale to do Maida Vale sessions. It wasn't John Peel, I don't think, but it was... You know,
I don't remember what
it was called. It was a Maida Vale session.
Yeah.
And we did Baker Street.
Oh, it was ours. You did Requiem, Killing Joke's Requiem. I mean, this is perfect for you, though, isn't it?
It really
was my
is.
First recording. Well, it's loads of great 70s records that have a sound that I have grown up with.
Yeah.
It's perfect for you.
Yeah, I mean, they're lively and they're fun, and I hear those recordings, and that's me the first time I ever recorded with the Foo Fighters. Then we got to that third record, which was...
Just before we go on, do you remember how Requiem goes?
Yeah. Dunk, dunk, gunk, 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 gunk. Yeah, it's pretty much that the whole time.
Yeah, it's good.
It's great, though.
That and Baker Street. Sorry, you were saying. You make a...
That was kind of like my first time in the studio with the Foo Fighters. But then we went back and we started doing There's Nothing Left to Lose, which has Learn to Fly on it. And I got in a similar somewhat situation as the first drummer. I was just green, and I was having a really hard time learning how to play in the studio, because it's just such a different thing, and really learning how to focus in on, because I mean, you know, if you're going to play drums on a record for Dave Grohl, it's got to be really like top shelf.
I mean, there's a certain pressure there, inherent pressure, isn't there?
And it's not from him, actually, to be honest. I mean, he definitely knows what he wants. But I think he was still struggling with, can I let another drummer play on my record at that time? I think that was another thing for him. And because we had such a bro-ship, if you will, and such a great connection live, that he had to sort of eventually give up the reins so that it could be a real band.
He's an amazing drummer, and we have two different styles, and so he does his thing, and I do my thing, and he adds so much to the songs that it's like sometimes too much. Can I say that? No, but I mean, you know, I can see like other drummers being in the band and feeling weird and feeling intimidated and whatever, but we do two totally different things, and I think we have mutual respect for each other, and it's awesome. I mean, it works perfect, you know. And there's no, you couldn't find a better drummer. There's no way. So it works out just fine.
And so I don't play like Dave. I play differently. So the first album I played on, I played half the drums on it, and Dave played the other half. And I was just sort of, I remember at one point, I was just like, Dave, just you play drums on it. I'll tour. I won't quit. Like I'll learn. I have to learn how to do this. You're Dave Grohl. You're a master already. Smells like Teen Spirit. I'm a ding dong. I've never done this before, and I'm scared. And I had red light fever, which is something that people use as a term. It's like whenever the recording lights are on, you kind of freeze up. And I was doing that,
yeah.
And he kind of held my hand through half of that record, and he did the other half of the tracks. There's one song on there called Aurora, which is the first song that I ever recorded. I felt like there's some good stuff. I played on Breakout, and I played on MIA, and a few of these other tracks on there. But there's a song called Aurora, which is, I think, the last song on that record. And that was the first time I ever went, okay, I can fit in this band as the drummer, not just the live drummer, but I can be me and still fulfill the role of being Dave Grohl's rhythm man,
yeah.
You know, because he writes in rhythms, not only in melodies, but in rhythms. So I have to meet him there. The next album, One by One, we eventually got to, and then that was, I played all the drums on that record, and I played all the drums on all the records since. Contrary to some belief, it's me.
It sounds like me.
We pick up the story with the Foo Fighters in a second, but just coming back to, given that you're here and we're trying to learn something at the drums, because I have to get inside the mindset of a drummer for a start. Talk us around your kit.
Well, all you really need at the beginning is a kick drum, a snare drum, a hi-hat, which are these two cymbals, one's upside down, and you control that one with your foot as you do the kick drum. And then you have a tom-tom here in the front, and if you're lucky, you have a floor tom. And if you're lucky, you have a crash cymbal. And if you're even luckier, you have a ride cymbal. And really, if you have that, you could pretty much play any song.
Yeah.
All the other stuff, the rototoms and the timpani drum.
We haven't seen today.
Okay, these are rototoms over here. Not even a drum, really. They're just like a piece of metal with a drum head on it. You can tune them with your hand. You know, it must have been in the 70s. Like, what is this? And I love them. Roger Taylor always had them on his... Yes. Next is floor tom, so he'd always do these great. This is color, you know. I'm drawn to with drummers, bells and cowbells and timpani drums and China cymbals and stuff. anything where you can surprise a listener. And I always loved that about Roger Taylor, and I always loved that about Stuart Copeland.
Yes, it's
little
details.
Things here and there, you know. Roger Taylor would just throw a little cowbell.
Bill Hawkins. Probably one of the most energetic drummers on the scene. I'm inspired by his music. It's so... This is March the 29th, 3 days after. Yeah. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. This is the Fifth Dimension, and I'm your host, Captain Fred. And we're going to take a break. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Things were not quite right, that everything was just ever so slightly askew.
Do you have, to paraphrase Morpheus, a splinter in your mind?
If you're interested in hearing the latest information about UFOs, the paranormal,
ancient cultures and structures,
monatomic elements,
longevity,
fantastic discoveries in science,
download it to your brain,
then tune in to us. Hi, I'm Dave.
And I'm Mackie.
And we are Shiny Side Out, Sundays 2 to 4 a.m. Eastern. See you then.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Are you interested in the paranormal? Murder mystery? Real natural law? Do you enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Crypt Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio. Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crypt Rick's Ivan Franklin. Welcome to the Crypt.
You're going back in?
There's still men out there.
God damn.
When I go home, people ask me, hey, Hoot, why do you do it, man? Why? Some kind of war junkie? I won't say a goddamn word. Why? They won't understand. They won't understand why we do it. They won't understand it's about the men next to you. And that's it. That's all it is.
Revolution Radio. Freedomslips.com. Number one listener-supported radio. The printing press for freedom at a time when freedom is needed the most.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
We'll
The difference between, you know, Roger and Stewart. How different are the rest of the styles then? Can you tell a Van Halen from a Phil Collins?
Oh yeah, I mean they're all so different.
Do you want to give us a bit?
I think that's what I like about what's different, or do you want me to play them?
Yeah, you can just
play them.
Come on. Okay. If we can't get Taylor to do Phil Collins, I'm going home.
Was that, I know there's something going on. Frida. I can see that's Phil Collins.
Yeah, man.
He would have big concert toms over here. Van Halen, I wish I had double bass. I wish I could play double bass. But the thing about Alex Van Halen is he just couldn't not swing. It didn't matter what, he was just always, you know, even if Jamie's crying. Love Alex Van Halen. Al is such a badass. I've done enough Roger Taylor, I'm sure.
Oh, do us another one.
Oh,
go
God.
On.
I'm in love with my God. Roger was a great cymbal grabber. Right. He was so good at grabbing us. He always looked great. And sounded great and sang. He was the man. He was a badass. Here's a song Vanilla Ice stole from Queen. We're taking it back. Larry Mullen. I played that last night in Dublin in the middle of my drum solo. I was pandering a bit. Sorry.
Play to the crowd.
Yeah, I was playing to the crowd. Yeah. There's no question. Larry was like, because I thought U2 was really, they were such an inventive band, and they were really important to me when I, like, Larry just had a very, he really had a creative style. And here's the thing, back then, before they were fixing everything with computers and putting, you know, unrealistic snare samples on everything, and you really could hear a style of a drummer back in the day, you know, I'm sure there will be some sort of garage revival or some rock thing. Like, you know, that's what I liked about, that's what I love about Jack White. When the White Stripes came out, everyone was like, oh, have you heard that girl play drums? I'm like, I love the way she plays drums. Yeah. It's so unique. It's down, 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 down. And then when she kicks into the beat, the way she plays is literally just, you know, I can't even do it. It's so unique.
Drummers are a separate species. I think a lot of people say this. Would you agree?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
It doesn't matter whether they're Keith Moon or, you know, even Dave Grohl, but they're a separate sort of species. What sort of temperament is a good temperament for a drummer? What do you need?
It's so hard to say. I mean, I guess you need to have energy.
Yeah.
yeah, definitely in our frickin' band, that's for sure. I mean, you gotta be up.
But you gotta be fit.
You gotta be fit. You know, okay, in your 20s, you're gonna be, you know, live fast and, you know, do all that kind of stuff. If you wanna play drums well, once you start getting under your late 40s, or even, you know, beyond, health becomes an issue. It really does. I mean, you can't be out all night and then go play a 3-hour Foo Fighters set. Yeah. You just can't do it.
And mentally as well, what do you think? Because you've got to hold the band together, haven't you?
Oh, there's no computers up on stage with us. See, there's so many bands now that, you know, they get up on stage and the drummer puts his in-ears in and they press a button and it goes 1, 2, 3, 4, and then he plays along to a click track while all this stuff is coming out of speakers that are on some computer behind the stage.
Yeah.
That's fine if that's what you want to do. That's not what we do. We don't do that at all. So the tempo of Learn to Fly is going to be slightly different every night, depending on how scared or excited or, you know, jet-lagged.
Yeah. Why the guys like it, isn't it? Well, we'll follow a tour around.
It's always
different every night, and because it's not predictable, and you don't go to a gig to hear the record.
That's why I really truly think, Dave said last night to the crowd of however many people, which was a lot of people, which we're so blessed to have these people come to our shows. Still can't believe that we play stadiums now. I mean, it didn't start out like that, and when I joined the band, it certainly wasn't that way. We were playing clubs and opening slots for Prodigy and the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Halfway up the bill at Reading.
Halfway up the bill at Reading, and we just kept at it, and people kept telling us rock and roll is dead.
Has anyone ever told you rock and roll is dead? Do you know rock and roll is dead? Do you think rock and roll is dead?
I mean, they kept telling us. I remember in 99 doing the promotion tour for Nothing Left to Lose. This German, why do you play the rock and roll is dead? Why? And I'm like, well, it ain't dead at our house, man. Your question.
Yeah.
When I walk up on stage at one of those places, I have major butterflies. I'm scared crapless every time. If there's 30,000 people that paid good money,
so it's a response. It's your
responsibility. It's a responsibility for me to hold the band together. Mm. And sometimes if Dave doesn't want to rehearse, I'm like, we'll rehearse without you. We're here to make you look good. and a drummer's job besides showing off. One sticks around and doing drum solos and being a show off, which I am a lot of the time, is to lay down some version of a solid foundation for the band to play to.
So that's the perfect drummer then. There's the sort of I'm trying to work out what the word is.
Like not presence. Presence.
Yeah, presence.
Because even Nick Mason.
Presence and responsibility. A bit of showbiz.
A little bit of showbiz. But if you watch Nick Mason. From Pink Floyd, obviously, at the Live at Pompeii. He still has a great dramaticness to his drumming, like Roger. I'm not going to say Nick Mason's a showy drummer, but he is in a way, and he's got a presence, and it's a presence.
lot. When you were, you know, given, say you were about 2-3 years into playing drums, what sort of things would you practice at home?
I didn't practice properly. I did. I played along to the radio.
Uh-huh.
Or I played along to records.
What were you doing around that time? Do you remember?
What was I playing along to?
Yeah, yeah.
I remember playing along to Unforgettable Fire by U2 and October. And I remember trying to play like some of the crazy Police stuff. I remember trying to play Murder by Numbers. And I just couldn't figure it out. And then there was like stuff on the radio like Rosanna by Toto, which basically he was doing Fool in the Rain double time. Which is all these grace notes and all this crazy stuff. I had no idea how he was doing it. And I wasn't interested in some dude coming over for $50 to try and show me how either. And they didn't have YouTube back then, so I couldn't like look it up on YouTube. How do you play the shuffle to Rosanna or Fool in the Rain? I still can't play that. It's so slow. That's a tough one. That's a tough one. That's when you know Bonham's just the greasiest. I can see your face still shining through the window on the other
side. Rosanna, Rosanna. You mentioned writing. Obviously, within the group now, you contribute to the writing process. Is there a particular favorite Foo Fighters song that you've been involved with from, you know, bass level upwards?
I would say the first song that I like actively, like me and Dave sat down and worked out, because there's a lot of stages to the way the Foo Fighters write, and the home studios are getting so good. Dave's really good at, you know, just popping in with demos that are, you have to work really hard to beat, but he's always constantly evolving the songs. So he brings a demo in, and then we learn it like that, and then we start ripping it apart. And sort of deconstructing it and then reconstructing it back to, and then the producer comes in, like Butch Vig or Greg, who did the last record, and then they go, well, you know, maybe you should do two choruses there, and yeah, you know, maybe the bridge isn't quite working or whatever. So there's a lot of layers as to the way things are written. But the first song that I have felt like a real part of the process was All My Life.
All my life I've been searching for something. Something never comes, never leads to nothing. Nothing satisfies, but I'm getting close. Closer to the prize at the end of the rope. All night long, I dream of the day. When it comes around and it's taken away.
Which is coming, which you've
it's
made.
Called Get the Money.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
It's Get the Money.
Yeah, there's a track on the album called Get the Money, and it's a duet singing me and Chrissy Hynde from The Pretenders.
Is it?
Yeah, and Joe Walsh is playing guitar.
No.
A couple duets, a couple vocal duets with ladies, actually. And Dave sings one with me on there as well.
Uh-huh.
And But a couple ladies, I did actually a really this super psychedelic, stonery, trippy song called See You in Hell, which this girl lives in my neighborhood, and her kids went to my kid's school, and it was Leanne Rimes. Remember her?
Yeah, I do.
You know Leanne Rimes. Yeah. Oh, she's still around. She still does her thing. And she's this great Patsy Cline-ish country singer. Yeah. And I saw her at this some school function for our kids, and I'm like, will you come sing on my record? And she's like, sure, where? I'm like, in my neighbor. I have a studio in my house. Yeah. And she came over, and I played her this really tripped-out sort of Soundgarden meets Pink Floyd meets, you know, Sabbath tune. And she's like, you want me to sing on this? I'm like, yeah. And she's like, all right, let's go.
Now, I'm very loath to do this, but as you're our tutor and you're here, and I think we've got a few minutes, even given that I have no rhythm, can you teach me how to hold a beat?
Yeah,
if I come over there?
I think I can. Okay, right. Steve, this is what I used to do with girls in high school, give them drum lessons. Ha! Not going to be quite the same with you, Steve, sorry.
Right.
All right, put them that one over here, that one under there. I want you to count to four hitting that, hitting the hi-hat. One, two, three, four. One, two, three, four. Now, put your foot on that pedal over there, the kick drum pedal. There you go. Come on. Give it a good proper kick. There you go. There you go. Now, on the third beat, you're counting to four still.
Uh-huh.
This little bugger, you hit that. It's called a snare drum, man. I mean... No. One on the kick drum. Start out with just hi-hat by itself. Two, three, four. One, two, three, four. One, two, three, four. One, two, three, four. Oh, you had one. You did it. You got... Hey, Steve, guess what the beauty of today is? Modern recording, that would have been enough. Oh, you're great. You're done. You can go home now. We'll put it together for you. You'll love it.
It was the shortest recording career known to man. It's been the best piece of tutoring. Thank you very much. There's hardly anyone down here, people behind the cameras and a couple of producers. But could you all stop what you're doing, please, and give a massive round of applause and a thank you to Taylor Hawkins, ladies and gentlemen. Bless you.
Bless you, Taylor Hawkins. Thank you so much for all the wonderful music that you brought to us. You know, well, I've got a few minutes left. I think this is from his last performance, in Bogota.
You want to play a Queen song, Dave? No? Oh, there it is. It's
What a wonderful talent, Taylor Hawkins. Thank God we had him here for as long as we did. Thank God we have Revolution Radio. Thank God for our listeners and for those that contribute. This is Captain Fred. We're listening to a tribute to Taylor Hawkins today. Passed way too soon, as so many have and so many will. So we need to remember how short this life is and live in the fifth dimension, the past, present, and future, all at once. Let's embrace our lives. Let's learn a new way to live. And let's just be grateful for those that have been here with us. Caught, shot, not. We love you. We'll be back. It's Captain Britt.
Revolution Radio, Studio B, at 11 a.m. on Saturday for Free Association, when we take a look at philosophy, spirituality, psychology, social issues, and geopolitics. It's every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern. On Studio B at freedomslips.com.
Transcending time and space, let us take you to the place inside your mind where thoughts divide and mysteries unwind. Join us every Monday evening right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And you will catch the Fenton Perspective with our great host, Lorian Fenton. Come listen in as she shares her amazing stories from the past to present, along with all of her guest secrets to the future. That's the Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Revolution Radio. Oh, and you don't need to expect us. We're already here.
And we must fight back! Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio. 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 All right. Thanks for listening while we take that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
People believe that the world has been subjected to a kill shot. They believe that, and I'm not going to take sides. A lot of people believe that that those that took this shot will suffer damage, at least, ultimately death. And those that we have loved will be among those that are counted in the ranks of those that have taken the shot and died. And then there'll be those that haven't and died. Taylor respected life in that he lived it. We need to respect life and live our lives. And love this life. Just trying everything and not giving up is a challenge nowadays. But there are victories and there is laughter. There are people that are becoming alive and aware that they don't have to behave according to mandate. And if Taylor Hawkins died from cot shot, that was amongst a lot of things that probably existed. And fine too. I think God has a lot of the decision making involved if he goes or doesn't go. But Taylor Hawkins lived and created such wonderful music, and I'm going to continue playing Taylor Hawkins today. Yeah, we have to run for our lives because we don't have any reason to look back anymore. We need to learn to live again, and we need to do it quickly because we don't have any more time. This is it. This is our time now to live and to disregard all of this bullshit that is taking us into this mental hell that they'd like to create for us. We believe just about anything we're told now. Pretty appropriate song. Wake up and run for your life, because that's about all we can do nowadays. Wake up and run, because they're coming after us. If you do believe that the caught shot is what killed Taylor Hawkins, then we better get our butts in gear and start learning to love each other and to enjoy this life instead of continually wringing our hands over what we should have done or could have done or might have been doing. Or it's hard to say, but you know, I don't want to do this media thing where we have to believe what we're told all the time.
Thanks a lot for coming out tonight, guys.
I'm a one-way motorway. I'm a road that drives away. Follows you back home. And I'm a streetlight shining. I'm a white light, blind and bright, burning off and on. It's times like these to learn to live again. It's times like these you give and give again. It's times like these you learn to love again. It's times like these, time and time again. Brand new sky to hang the stars upon tonight. And I'm a little divided to a stay or run away and leave it all behind.
So if we want to save ourselves, then we need to save each other. We have to love each other. Taylor passed, he was 50 years old. Not everybody gets that chance. He did the best. And then we pass on. You know, Taylor wrote a song with his band, the Coattail Riders, of Middle Child. I lost my middle child a few years ago. There will be more loss in this life. There will be others that will pass because of what's happened in the past with COVID or with whatever they're pushing to genocide the population of the world. But it is times like this that we learn to love again. Uh-oh. What am I at here? Hang on a second. Yeah, Taylor had a last song that I really liked. This was called Middle Child. I'm going to play this.
That it's not a date. You were lost when you got home yesterday. Came to me and I knew just what to say. My little twin, I am here with you. Stay close and we will make it through. Yeah.
And long time drummer.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know what I'm doing here anymore. I've got so many things on hand right here. I hope that everybody's enjoyed the show today, because I really wanted to celebrate a life that influenced a lot of people and that everybody enjoyed. And I think that we should begin to realize that these people that will be falling sick due to this experimental vaccine or whatever you want to call it, probably falling victim to malicious media. We can feel any way we want to feel, but it's not going to help us very much to be depressed. Depression is the killer. It's not going to help us any to be angry. It's not going to help us very much to warn those that did things that they thought that were in their best interest. These people that will be passing because of different reasons, we need to love them now while we can. And pass any animosities that we may have about whatever political side they may have taken for whatever reason they may have taken. And learn to love again. I think that's what's been taken as humanity. That's what's been wrong. So until next week, people, if you've got an extra few dimes to throw into the kitty, you might do it. Send it to revolution.radio, freedomslips.com. There's information for helping us on the website. Anybody that's listening or should be able to go to that. I know there's a lot of videos. I hope and I pray that everybody that hears this broadcast today is safe and learns to love again. Well, until next week, this is Captain Fred. This is the Fifth Dimension.
This is Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. I pulled some strings and gotten you front row seats to my new show, The Perfect Triangle, live Friday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Revolution Radio Studio A. The Perfect Triangle is equilateral, three sides of the same length. In an angry, bipolar world, three perfect sides reveal many truths.
Body, mind, and spirit.
Thought, word, and deed.
Conspiracy, propaganda, and truth.
Natural health, allopathic tyranny, and your body.
Freedom, globalism, and sovereign nations.
And so much more. Each week, the Perfect Triangle will blast through fake news lies, champion the natural way and natural law, unravel the Orwellian deceptions of our corrupt government, reveal the satanic evil of globalist banks and transnational corporations. Tune in every Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, to Revolution Radio Studio A for thoughtful discussions with free thinkers. Your calls are always welcome. The Perfect Triangle, with Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Join me, won't you?
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict. But